enormous Game 6. I mean, like, they're all big, but an enormous Game 6 tonight. We are joined by a senior NBA writer for Bleacher Report, host of the Full 48 podcast. You know he's the friend of the program. He is Howard Beck. I'm going back there. Howard, what's going on? How are you?
Doing great, Jim. You?
Good, good. Howard, you have covered this game for a long, long time. Have you ever seen, however, an NBA Finals like this one?
Nothing that is even close. This is 22 years on the league for me, and I think it's either 18 or 19 finals that I've covered. And even at the start of this, Jim, like 17 different weird things ago, twists and turns, even at the start, I said this was going to be like nothing we'd seen because we've never had an NBA Finals open with a player of Kevin Durant's caliber, not just out, but out and looming as a possible threat to return to change the entire tenor of the series at any given time. And so we had that, just that hanging over those first several games. Is he coming back? Is he not? Is it game three? Is it game four? And, you know, sure enough, this thing's been all over the place since then. And we've had other injuries. Klay Thompson misses a game. Kevin, you know, Kevon Looney has his stuff. And then, you know, for Durant to go out the way he did, as awful as that was, and yet that game, from a basketball standpoint, was as tense and thrilling as you could hope a finals game would be, and all the way down to the final seconds, and with seemingly just Draymond Green's fingernail potentially preventing the Raptors from clinching a championship on the last play. Every piece of this, I feel, is just an unprecedented version of the NBA Finals. It's been fascinating and obviously at times awful because of what happened to KD.
Right. Howard Beck joining us right now. So in terms of what happened to KD, when he comes back, Howard, you see what he's doing, and he's playing really, really well. And in the back of your mind, you got to be thinking, damn, this is what this entire series could have been had he been on the floor. But then he goes down. What went through you when you saw him go down the way he did?
I gasped. I mean, I think everybody sitting around me in the press section and a lot of fans too just gasped because, you know, you don't know what – you're just far enough from the action. It's not the same as TV, and I want to, like, just spell this out to people. You're watching at home. You've got your nice close-up tight view on your 100-inch, you know, flat screen, and you're seeing vivid details. You know immediately that something looks wrong. For us, watching it live and not looking at the monitor, the first thing you think is, well, he's down, but I'm not sure exactly why he's down. Did he slip? As Serge Ibaka said, maybe his shoe slipped off, he thought. And so it takes a second, but your first thought is, I hope this isn't what I think it might be. Because you know coming back from the calf that the Achilles was one of those things that seemed to be looming in the background. And it took a few seconds at least to kind of catch up to, you know, for your thought process to catch up to, wait, Is that what I think it is? Look down at the monitor. Oh, no, he's holding the lower part of his leg. I mean, and at that point, your heart just sinks. It's the, you know, it was the worst case scenario, and it was exactly what, you know, everybody feared as they were contemplating having him return in the first place, and why the Warriors up until that point had been very cautious. And, you know, we can debate up and down forever the decision-making and how they got to that conclusion, but obviously, everybody decided it was okay, and he looked great. He looked great when he was dancing in the hallway. He looked great in those first 11 minutes of play. He looked spry. He looked like his old self, and you know it's just such a tough thing all the way around.
We're talking to Howard Beck. One more thing about that: you spoke to Sean Livingston in the aftermath of the injury. Sean Livingston, of course, is somebody who's gone to hell and back when it comes to injuries. What did he have to tell you about that?
He was very impassioned, and this was on his way out of the arena that night. I caught up with him, and you know Sean, one of the all-time good guys of this league.
Definitely.
And a really smart guy, very thoughtful. And Sean has seen it all because he's experienced it all because his career was very much in doubt after he blew out his knee a few years into the league. So he's very sensitive to these subjects, and he was, you know, unsolicited. I mean, I asked him a very broad question, one of these kind of meandering kind of, Sean, how do you guys as players balance the competitive instincts with protecting your health and whatever? And he immediately went to, listen, Bob Myers and Steve Kerr and this organization would never knowingly put Kevin Durant or any of us in a position to hurt ourselves. Like, he immediately went to this, just people need to know. These guys, this organization, these people care about us. And he was just very sensitive to the idea that people were going to frame this in a certain way. But he was also concerned about everything that preceded that. Some of the discussion, whether it was in regular media, social media fans, pundits, whoever, questioning Kevin Durant's resolve or his commitments and all this, because it created, as Sean said, a certain kind of perceived pressure to return. And I said, do you think that that's why he came back? Do you think he was feeling the pressure? And then on that one, he kind of demurred, said, you know, you'll have to ask, you know, Kevin that. I don't know. But he clearly, Sean had that concern that the discussion around Kevin Durant before that day might have fed into him deciding to come back prematurely.
I was going to say, Howard, where did he come out on that? For instance, I've said that, yeah, he may have felt pressure to come back, but I don't think it was from the organization. I think it was from pretty much everywhere else. Do you think, because we know that Kevin Durant sees that, we know that he reads it, and we even know that he reacts to it sometimes. Do you think that in any way influenced his decision?
Impossible to know, and I don't want to try to mind read, but you're right to point out that this is a guy who, as we know, is more sensitive than most athletes of his stature in terms of being very attentive to and cognizant of the discussions around him. I mean, he goes back at Chris Broussard on social media. He goes back at random fans on social media. For better or worse, he is sensitive to these things. He hears it. He reacts to it. Did that influence his decision to play that night? I mean, we'll never know, or we'll know maybe someday when Durant is back in the public eye and ready to speak on everything that's happened. But I don't know what role that played, or if that was just his own competitive instincts driving him back as soon as he could, and, you know, the medical folks saying, listen, we think you're okay.
I agree with you. I think that's fair. Howard Beck joining us. All right, so what about Toronto? Where does that leave them? They're on the road, but it's a place where they've had a lot of success. They know that Kevin Durant's not going to be there. How do you think Toronto shows up?
This part's fascinating, Romy, because what we've seen in this finals, and also in this postseason in general, was them kind of shedding all of the baggage of prior Raptors flameouts. And it makes sense. This is not the same Raptors team at all. I mean, Kyle Lowry's really the only holdover in the starting lineup from those, you know, prior postseasons that everybody always held up. But still, no matter what the composition of the team is, you know that you just let a chance to clinch this thing at home get away from you, blowing whatever the 6-point lead in the final, however many minutes that was. It's all a blur to me now. And, you know, do you carry that forward, or do you just, you know, shake that off and say, okay, we'll close it out at Oracle, where we've won a couple times in this series already. But still, this is the last game in Oracle Arena history. Combine that with the Warriors having saved themselves, you know, from elimination for another day. Combine that with the emotions about Durant, everything else. It's going to be as charged up as we've ever seen a game in the finals at Oracle tonight. And how does that impact the Raptors? And is there a seed of doubt in the back of their mind now? You know, we'll see. But it's, you know, the Warriors are going to be really tough to close out. And the thing, too, that's changed in the last week is this. All right, Durant is gone. They will not have even the 11-point surge that he gave them the other night. And that was really important for them. And that's a big reason why they won the game, I think. But Klay Thompson missed a game last week. He missed game 3. And so he had to get his way back, you know, into rhythm in game 4. And by that time, Steph Curry was gassed from game 3. Well, this time those guys are both in sync, as healthy as they're going to be. The Warriors are not thinking about Durant anymore. And, you know, I think we'll see a better version of the Warriors tonight than we saw in games 3 and 4 at Oracle. Is that enough to beat Toronto? I don't know, because the Raptors are still, they've got, I think, the overall talent and depth advantage.
So final thought, I think, to answer your question, rhetorically or not, I think it's not enough. I think that you know what you're going to get from the Splash Brothers. I think you need something else. So where's it going to come from? Is it going to come from DeMarcus Cousins? Is it going to come from Quinn Cook? Is it going to come from somebody else? Do they need something beyond what they're getting?
Probably. Unless they're going to play a better brand of defense, which we've seen in flashes. And the Cousins thing is really interesting because DeMarcus Cousins was an outright disaster in game 4. I thought, my God, we should never see him get on the court again in this series. And I don't know if he was going to if Durant didn't go down the other night. I think it was pretty clear that they were going to keep him out of the rotation until they were forced to put him back out there. And then he played pretty well. He's very vulnerable defensively. He's got no ability to stop anyone or to stay in front of anyone. But he's definitely an offensive option and a release valve for the Splash Brothers. So, yeah, I mean, I think he's still the most likely candidate. I don't think you're going to say, well, we just need a big Quinn Cook game or an Alphonso McKinney game. Do you get one more throwback game from Sean Livingston or Andre Iguodala? Maybe. But yeah, you're right. They're limited in what they can do offensively, but we also know that backcourt can fill it up and those guys could carry you alone and just play enough defense to slip by. I mean, there's a formula there somewhere.
We are a few hours off now. He's a senior NBA writer for Bleacher Report, host of the Full 48 podcast, and somebody who comes on the show quite a bit, always kills it. Howard Beck, my guest. Howard, thank you so much. Have a great night. Be looking for you.
Thanks, Roma. You too. Take care.
Good job, Howard. Howard Beck, I think somebody other than the Splash Bros has to step up. And DeMarcus Cousins, I think he was better than good in that last game. I think he kept that team together. There's no way they win that game without his contributions. But can he do it again? And he is a defensive liability right now. He's banged up. He's coming back from two major injuries. But they don't win that game without him. They need a big game, I think, from Cook or McKinney. Iggy, if he can do it, Sean Livingston, somebody's got to step up.